front porch, landscaping in harmony.
Working with a partner who is nature, me and the trees, me and the rocks, me and the site, that's a very giddy experience that your partner is nature.
This is The Front Porch on NHPR. I'm John Walters. This time of year, many homeowners are spending a lot of time outdoors, tending to their lawns and gardens. The usual approach is an expanse of green grass with flower beds around the edges. And if you're lucky enough to have some woods on your land, you pretty much leave them alone. Robert Gilmore sees a lot of untapped potential in that approach. He's a writer and landscape designer. He says with just a little time and effort, you can create a space that provides beauty and privacy by taking advantage of the trees, rocks, and natural features you already have. Bob is author of Beauty All Around You, a book about gardening in small places on a low budget, and The Woodland Garden, about turning your woods into a special place. Bob has a woodland garden of his own called Evergreen at his home in Goffstown. Bob, welcome to The Front Porch.
Thank you, John. Nice to be here.
For those unfamiliar with the concept, could you tell us what a woodland garden is?
A woodland garden, as I define it, is when you take a raw woods, and instead of leaving it alone, you can begin a process I call gardening by subtraction. And that is consists in really three things to begin to make it a garden. The first thing that you do is I call cleaning up. And that just means that you pick up all the dead stuff, both standing and fallen, just because it'll fall down eventually. And you don't want dead branches and limbs and so forth in a woodland garden any more than you want it on your lawn or in any other garden. So you do all this cleaning up. And then a process called weeding. And weeding is taking out of live things that you don't want there. Cleaning up, back to that, is taking out the dead stuff. Weeding is the taking out of the live stuff. Often that is little whippy deciduous trees that are the clutter in the landscape. Mm-hmm. So you take all that out, and unwanted brush and so forth. And lastly, pruning. That's just taking out parts of, you know, of live trees. That process alone makes the garden, or makes the woods open and park-like, all by itself. And one of the nice things about it is that it's basically free. At that stage in the process, you're not buying anything. All that you're doing is a little labor, just opening it up, thinning it out.
But then you've got open land or some open within the woods,
right,
and you've got to fill it
right,
with something.
And you've got to fill it. But after the gardening by subtraction, you have what may be like an empty apartment house, or you know, an empty house. It needs a bit of furniture, and as you say, that would be plants mainly evergreen shrubs and evergreen ground covers. You already have, of course, the trees. The most expensive plants in the garden are already there, already established, already planted. Trees that are unavailable in any nursery at any price are there, you know, established and growing well. So trees in general are the one thing, the expensive thing, that you don't have to add. Shrubs and ground covers primarily. I recommend evergreens because they're interesting year-round, and they tend to be shade-tolerant. Rhododendrons are the most colorful. Mountain laurel is also colorful. Andromeda and so forth. Evergreen ground covers, pachysandra, vinca, ginger, winter creeper, and so forth. Those are the main additions to the woodland garden.
They fill space with some beauty, but with low maintenance.
Exactly. One of the nice things about a woodland garden is it's almost a little ecosystem that takes care of itself. How does it do that? Partly because it's in the shade, so it's a slow cooking ecosystem. Not a lot of weeds happen in this because of the shade. Also, the leaves and pine needles and stuff that falls off of the canopy, if this were, falling on a lawn, it would be a problem. It'd have to be raked up. It'd make the lawn unsightly and too acid and so forth. In a woods, this is desirable because it's free mulch. And mulch, as we know, keeps the soil cool and moist. When it decays, it becomes free fertilizer. So In gardening, there is often a free lunch. You can get something for nothing, and the free, mulch in a woodland, garden is one of those things.
And you have your own woodland garden called Evergreen. Could you tell us about it?
It's an acre on Summer Street in Goffstown. It's mainly a mature white pine woods, underplanted mainly with rhododendrons. We've got berms around it, planted mainly with rhododendron maximum. Those are the Rosebay rhododendrons. And then a lot of Catawba rhododendrons and a lot of ground covers. And there's a seasonal brook, a cascading brook, and there's lots of huge rocks. It's a very fortuitous site. And the interesting thing, John, is that I bought the house about 20 years ago before I became interested in landscaping. So after this is sort of, an extra career of mine. After I became interested, there was this glorious site that, I just had to work with, and I did.
Does your garden evolve over time? Are you always doing something different with it?
Not much. Mm-hmm. It's basically there because it sort of takes care of itself. The trees grow. The trees grow. That's a dumb thing to say. But you may want to leave it in. Shrubs grow, mm-hmm. and which means they get more attractive, more impressive, more blossoms every year. The ground covers fill in. But it's a relatively static garden, and in that sense, it's like a Japanese garden. It looks, a lot the same every year.
It sounds like a woodland garden can turn into a really special place, a place where you can spend a lot of time, and kind of a retreat almost.
Yes. It's quiet. It's away from the world. Its main advantage, though, I think, are two things. It's one of the most impressive landscapes that there is. Why? Because most landscapes, certainly most, lawns and flower gardens, are two-dimensional. It's just the length and width of the garden room on what we call the ground plane of the garden. A woodland garden has height, so it's a three-dimensional space: length and width and height, because the trees form the walls and the ceilings of the outdoor room. So, to quote Lord Byron, we not only walk over beauty, but in beauty all around us, which became the title of the of the book. The other advantage of a woodland garden is that it is a low maintenance garden. If you want to have a large garden today, and unless you're rich, you need low maintenance. This is necessary. So a woodland garden, again, trees, shrubs, ground covers. Woodland garden or not, any kind of garden, trees, shrubs, ground covers, put that on your refrigerator, because they largely take care of themselves. And apropos our earlier exchange, the shade and the mulch of the pine needles and so forth maintain the garden for you. Low maintenance gardens in general, woodland gardens in particular, don't have to be mowed, don't have to be raked, don't have to be limed, unlike a lawn. It's just the opposite. Now, they are a bit more expensive to install than a lawn. A lawn is inexpensive to install. If a contractor puts in a new house, why does he put in a lawn? Partly because it's traditional, partly because it's cheap. He puts in an inch of soil, some grass seed, and he is out of there. A low-maintenance garden consisting, again, of the trees and shrubs and ground covers primarily, costs a bit more to install, sometimes a lot more. But after it's in, it almost can take care of itself.
Bob Gilmore is on the front porch on NHPR. He's a writer and landscape designer from Goffstown. His books include Beauty All Around You and The Woodland Garden. if we're not lucky enough to have woods on our property, if we just have the little little suburban lawn, or we live in town or something, how do we create some of that effect in a small plot?
I would say the most important thing that you should do is to create privacy. Privacy isn't done, by the way, so that people can't see you. It's so you can't see the things outside of your land that you would prefer not to see. A good sort of device is to ask yourself this question. If you just pretend that you had power somehow to control the landscape all around your house for as far as you could see in every direction, just imagine that. If you had this power to control the landscape all around your house, would you specify cars and trucks going by? Would you specify an asphalt road, telephone poles, your neighbors' houses and so forth? Probably not. And if the answer is no, you would not want to see what you do see from your land, then the question is, what do we do about it? What do we do about it? The rich have a solution. They can just sell that property and buy 100 acres and put their house in the middle of 100 acres and so forth. We have to be a little more creative. And among the best solutions to creating a sort of estate-like privacy, if you will, is berms. Berms are man-made ridges. Hopefully they look natural. Put around the boundary, around the perimeter of your house. A berm is made out of fill of some kind, sand, clay, fill, coated with loam, that's your planting medium, and topped with evergreen trees or shrubs. Now, the combined height of the fill, the loam on top of the fill, and the evergreen trees and shrubs on top of the fill, you add all that up, and that's the total height of the berm and the total height of the screening power that you can get from, a berm. And most berms on, most properties are high enough to hide the cars and trucks and the first stories of buildings and so forth. These are not, incidentally, wasted space. Some people said, well, I can't take all the space, for a berm. A berm actually increases, if you think about it, the size of the ground because it's on an angle. And a berm is a terrific platform for plants. It's a terrific platform for shrubs, for example, because if you imagine it, the plants up on the berm are not hidden by the plants below. So you often get this glorious sweep of blooming shrubs, on berms. So it is both beautiful and useful at the same time. Another advantage of it is lots of advantage. One other advantage is that because it's so massive, it's dense, it's an excellent sound barrier. It's also low maintenance, mainly because it's dirt. Dirt doesn't wear out. And because it's, it's planted with low maintenance shrubs and, trees and shrubs, it largely takes care of itself. And it's also neighborly. A lot of people say, well, fences, look like privacy barriers, as do hedges and so forth. And they do. A berm does not look like a privacy barrier. It is not unneighborly. On the contrary, it's very friendly because it's planted with these beautiful blooming plants.
When I go out and look at a lawn, I have no idea what I'm doing. I don't trust my aesthetic judgment.
Right.
Short of hiring Bob Gilmore, maybe that's what I should do. But short of hiring Bob Gilmore,
what do I do?
That would
be a reasonable idea, John. That would be a very good idea offhand.
But how do I know? If I'm just going out on my lawn, how do I know what's good? How do I know what to do?
Just like that? you've got to know what the site is, where the privacy barrier goes, how much space that you have to have. Mm-hmm. About lawn, lawns, grass. Grass is a ground cover that can be walked on. That is the main advantage of grass. If you need a badminton court, have enough lawn for a badminton court. If you want, lawn parties, you want to play touch football and so forth, have enough lawn for those purposes. Keep as much lawn as you use. That's important.
But and don't just have the big expanse of
don't
lawn.
Don't just have, right, exactly. Keep as much lawn as you use and get rid of the rest. Replace that. Cover it with berms, sweeps of shrubs. That's what they do with the lawn. Most Americans have way too much lawn. Any lawn that's not usable, lawn, for example, in the front of most houses isn't used. It's the only time most people are on that lawn is when they're taking care of it. It's like the 19th century parlor, you know, which was never used, or even the 20th century, you know, 21st century pot. It's never used.
It's just the room with the plastic over the furniture.
That could be. And it's never used, you know, other than to go in there and clean it. Mm-hmm. And in a lawn is the same way. It's a terrible waste of landscape opportunity.
Bob Gilmore is on the front porch on NHPR. I'm John Walters. We'll be back after a short break. Still to come, Bob talks about common gardening mistakes, using natural features to their fullest, and borrowing from other landscapes. And tomorrow on the front porch, the female dimension of the divine. We'll meet Pat Parnell, poet and spiritual explorer.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio. Support for the Front Porch comes from our contributing listeners and from Country Woods Unfinished Furniture, Route 27 in Raymond, a leader in unfinished furniture for over 20 years, online at cwuf.com. Nathan Wexler and Company, CPAs and business advisors, timely and responsive, providing assistance with acquisition, sales, and succession planning to businesses, 224-5357. And Moulton Farm off Route 25 in Meredith, a farm market providing fresh produce, proven winners, annuals, perennials, and hanging baskets and freshly baked pies and breads. Stay with us for more on the front porch, and at 7 o'clock it's fresh air.
This is the front porch on NHPR. I'm John Walters with Bob Gilmore. He's a writer and landscape designer from Goffstown. We're talking about woodland gardens and other simple ways to add to the beauty, privacy, and even value of a home. When you go to someone's house to do a landscape design,
right,
what are you looking for? What goes through your mind when you go there and see that space for the first time?
The opportunities. The opportunity, you know, how can we get the most out of this site? Privacy is an issue. And how can I create, you know, as much privacy for that, that homeowner? How can I create as much automatic color and interest? Those are the two things. How to get a garden that's impressive, how to make, if possible, extraordinary gardens, not just going through the motions of, you know, some plants here, but to have an impressive garden, a garden that delights.
How about a common gardening mistake, something that a lot of people do that really doesn't work?
Well, we've touched on some already. Too darn much lawn, you know. You have only as much lawn as you use. Biggest mistake is putting too many plants in too small a space. Perennial gardens. People will go to a garden center and get, oh, this, and I'll get that plant, and that plant, and that plant, and 20, 30, 40 other plants, and they put them all together, plant A beside plant B beside plant C, and so forth. And that makes a mishmash. If you do that, you're practicing horticulture, but you're not doing landscape gardening. You've got plants that are in and of themselves beautiful. Each individual plant is beautiful, one hopes, but the whole thing is a mishmash, because the eye has to see like too many different things all at once, and it's red as kind of a boom, you know. That's the biggest mistake, and the biggest single piece of advice I would give, and it's old advice, is plant in big sweeps or drifts of one species. Now that's initially, that's sometimes hard to do. When I started, I said, nah, that's just too much. That's just too boring, too uninteresting. Ironically, the opposite is true. The best gardens, the most delightful gardens are simple gardens that make powerful statements. So one color in a space, one color, one plant, broken up with accents.
You like to make use of existing elements and natural features when
yes,
you can.
Yes,
Is it fair to say you have a more naturalistic style than traditional landscaping?
I do, partly because it's low maintenance, mm-hmm. partly because it fits the, you know, a rural landscape. One way to make gardening easier is to use what nature provides.
New Hampshire is a great place for
that. Yes, exactly. A woodland garden is an excellent example of that, not the only example. If you have any kind of water on a landscape, use it. A half an acre pond is half an acre that's already been landscaped for you. It doesn't have to be mowed or raked, right? If you have a brook, use it. Clean it out, back to our, you know, gardening by subtraction. Clean it out, open it up. Enhance it by taking away the clutter around it so that the eye focuses on the brook. If you have interesting ledge, handsome rocks, incorporate those into, obviously, a naturalistic landscape. Use natural, you know, natural features. We talked about hiding undesirable things, undesirable with berms, but the converse of that is that you should open up desirable ones, handle the privacy barriers so that if there's a mountain that you can see, open it up and make it part of the landscape. There's a concept in landscape design called borrowing, and borrowing is when you borrow things outside the landscape, mountains, other people's woods, and so forth. People think that that evergreen is like 2 or 3 acres of land. It's actually about 0.8 acres, because what people see is my neighbor's woods, my neighbor's cliffs, my other neighbor's woods, and so forth. So visually, it's a 3 or 4 acre landscape. And don't forget that all of this discussion now, including about privacy and so forth, landscape isn't just the land that you owned. Landscape is everything that you can see. If you can see the mountain from your landscape, it's in your landscape. But by the same token, if you can see a car and a truck from your landscape, the car and the truck is in landscape. The trick is to hide the stuff that we don't want to see and to open up the good stuff.
If you like to make use of natural features, do you like to use native plants?
If the native plant is there, or even if the naturalized, we call them non-native plants that do good, we call them naturalizing exotics. I like to use them if they're good plants and already there. That's part of, you know, using what nature provides. In New Hampshire, particularly in southern New Hampshire, we're apt to have a lot of mountain laurel. That's a native plant. And I had a client, for example, had about 3 acres, including an acre of mountain laurel. And I said to him, you already have a glorious woodland garden here. All you've got to do is clean it up. So definitely like, you know, to use anything that we're lucky enough to have around. On the other hand, there isn't anything holy about native plants. In plants, I'm an equal opportunity employer. I like the best plant for the site, for the job, regardless of national origin. So native plants can be, if we abolished all non-native plants, 80% probably of good landscaping plants would be exiled, and we'd have very dull gardens.
Bob Gilmore is on the front porch on NHPR. He's a writer and landscape designer from Goffstown. His books include The Woodland Garden and Beauty All Around You. What's the most useful plant for New Hampshire lawns and gardens? Is there one?
The single most useful plant? Yeah. No. There isn't. There are kinds of plants. Landscape designers think in terms of categories, I guess. Obviously the plant has to be hardy to the zone, but that that's not saying anything terribly interesting. Evergreen shrubs are, in my opinion, the best because being evergreen, you know, they are interesting year-round. Broadleafed evergreen shrubs, in particular, because they have blossom color. If I had to pick one, John, I'd pick rhododendrons because, you know, they're evergreen. And if you plan it right, you can do a sequence of bloom. You can do I call them the little leaf rhodies in April, PJMs being a nice example, big leaf rhodies, the Catawba family for color in May. You can do mountain laurel for color in June. You can do something called rhododendron maximums, the big rose bay rhodies, for color in July. Unfortunately, that's it. For color in August, you have to use hydrangeas. Unfortunately, they're not evergreen, but no plant is perfect. Those would be my choices.
You obviously love your work.
Yes.
What do you get out of it?
Delight. Delight. It is such pleasure to work with a site and to, one hopes, unless you're deluding yourself, maximize it, helping it to, you know, realize its potential. The converse of that, by the way, is that it's often sad to see sites that are not, that do not realize their potential. So the delight of working with a partner who is nature. That's me and the trees, me and the rocks, me and the site. That's a very sort of even giddy experience that your partner is nature, nature itself, you know.
You must go past houses sometimes and sort of have the impulse to go up and knock on the door. I'd like to offer my services.
I'd like to offer my services, yeah. You know, a couple times I've done that and I've had interesting conversations and sure, indeed I would, but what can you do, you know?
When you were growing up, did your parents make you do yard work?
Yes.
And did you like it?
No. Partly because it was, you know, weeding the lawn, and, yeah. I became interested in landscape design about 15 years ago, 15 or 20 years ago. My degrees are in political science, but I'm cursed or delighted, depending on your point of view, with many interests. And in the 80s, I became interested in landscape design. I followed my bliss, as Joseph Campbell says, and I'm happy I did.
Well, Bob, thank you very much for coming in today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Bob Gilmore, writer and landscape designer from Goffstown. He's the author of several books, including The Woodland Garden and Beauty All Around You. Bob's own woodland garden, Evergreen, is open to the public once a year on the first weekend in June. That's this weekend, Friday through Sunday, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. each day. For information, you can call Bob at 497-8020. The Front Porch is produced by Laura Colbert and Shay Zeller. You can get more information about today's show and listen anytime at our website, nhpr.org. You can also pass on your ideas for guests, order tapes or CDs of the show, and sign up for our weekly schedule by email. Next time on The Front Porch, the female dimension of the divine. Pat Parnell is a poet, writer, and lifelong Catholic who was dissatisfied with the traditional image of God as a male. She's explored female imagery in the Bible and other traditions and used them to deepen her own faith. She'll talk about her spiritual journey and her poetry. I'm John Walters. Join me and Pat Parnell on The Front Porch tomorrow at 6:30 on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio. We're approaching 7 o'clock. It's fresh air at the top of the hour. I'm Roger Parmley. Support for NHPR comes from contributing listeners like Karen Adler of Portsmouth and from MEI Search Consultants, recruiting engineers, supply chain, and sales talent for New England businesses on the web at meisearch.net. Golf and Ski Warehouse, with stores in West Lebanon, Greenland, and Hudson, New Hampshire, and on the web at golfandskiwarehouse.com. and Starving Artist Movers, serving residential and commercial clients throughout New England since 1987. Located in Concord, Manchester, and Laconia. 800-698-4468. This is New Hampshire Public Radio, WEVO Concord 89.1, WEVH Hanover at 91.3, WEVN Keene at 90.7, WEVC Gorham 107.1, and WEVJ Jackson at 99.5.